was washing the dishes. He had a big apron around his middle. And the girls were drying them. We knew that we were giving Mama the most unexpected moment of leisure to sit and chat with the family at the table. However, she came into the kitchen, and Papa said, "Now, this is what I like to see when girls help their mother in the kitchen." And Mama said, "Well, there's something nice you could do for them, for Lillian." And he said, "What is it?" "Well," she said, "Lillian wants you to sign a paper for her." And he bristled. "I don't sign papers just like that." And she said, "Well, this one is very easy. She has a chance to go to a very good school and wouldn't cost anything. But you do have to sign and say that you'd be willing to send her to college when she gets through." He said, "College? Why, that will make her an old maid. What does she want to go to college for?" Well, this dialogue went on for a few minutes, and pretty soon Mama had virtually persuaded Papa that he thought of it himself in the first place. And so he said he would sign the paper that would make it possible for me to go to the girls' Latin school. And not surprisingly, that settled it for all of the girls, who all of us went to the Latin school afterwards. And after we got through the Latin school, there was no question that we would go on to college. We had college entrance examinations, of course, but that was why I went to Radcliffe, and my sisters did later. Now, what else do I want to tell you here at this point? I must cut things down a little bit too much, a little more.
Was it after Radcliffe that you married?
Yes. I became engaged while I was there, but I married. I graduated from the class of 1918, and I married in the November of 1918. Now...
And did you meet your husband through going to Radcliffe?
No. Well, I thought I'd put that in, oughtn't I? One of the visitors to our house during the summer was a distant cousin of my mother's, a little white-haired woman with blue eyes who came from Pittsburgh. And there was a tremendous exchange of reminiscences about their families and about the old country. When this lady, whose name was Judith Friedberg, left, my mother gave her a graduation picture of mine, taken after my grammar school graduation, with a white dress and black patent leather shoes and black stockings and long braids hanging down, tied with a big white ribbon, and I clutching a rolled up diploma in my hand. No question but what my mother took great pride in this. And she gave it to this visitor, who took it home with her, and who thus brought it about that eventually her son would come to Boston and meet me and eventually marry me. Now, let me move on again. This gets to be too much. Too much. We have to get over to Pittsburgh, don't we?
Right.
Yes.
Lillian, I wanted to ask you, was your father's business with Jewish customers or with the total community?
The total community, not Jewish customers.
Not Jewish customers.
He always used to say,
Maybe you shouldn't know.
He always used to say, why don't you go elsewhere? Oh, and of course, I think my father had some of the most atrocious furniture in the world. You know, the salesman could sell him almost anything. My mother used to say, Nathan, just because the salesman brought it to you, you don't have to buy it. And the windows of his store were really something for the books. We used to say, now, Papa, don't you think you ought to change the window? He'd say, now, this is my business. This is what my customers like, and I don't want you to tell me how to run the store. Now, this was a very kindly, wonderful man, but he was obstinate on that. I guess he was right. He put a kitchen stove and a living room set, and it could be a basin, a pitcher, and a bowl, and everything like that, all in the same window. Mm-hmm. But it satisfied him. After all, he was right, and everybody loved him. If a family would come in and they'd want to buy some expensive bedroom set, he'd say, now what do you need that for? You've got growing children. You know it's only going to give you a lot of heartache. Why don't you wait a couple of years until they're older?
That's wonderful.
Now, what installment store sells that way nowadays? All they want to do is stuff things into them and put them to debt up to their necks so that they don't know where they're going to pay for anything. When my father died, these people just swarmed to his funeral. He had a wonderful name. And that was what he was proudest of, his good name.
Did he stay in that business until...
That was his only business. He left it when he died, mm-hmm. That was all.
Lillian, since we're going to move to Pittsburgh soon,
yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about your brother and at what point he was launched on his legal career. You just...
Oh, yeah, I just mentioned him, didn't I? Well, it is kind of hard. See, he was just a little older than I. I went to the Dillaway Grammar School. He went to the Dudley Grammar School. Well, supposing I tell here. When my brother was 13 years of age, he went through the very important ritual of bar mitzvah, which was a source of great delight to his parents. And... he had by that time graduated from the grammar school, was attending classes in the English high school, was always a good student, and after school hours went to the store to be of help. It was quite common for him to take some of the cards, customers' cards, and go to their homes for collection of the weekly installments. From the time he was 10, he was able to carry this responsible job. And I never at any time heard that he had ever lost any money or that anybody had ever attacked him or taken money from him. The customers always spoke glowingly to my father about his boy, how polite he was and how nice he was. And the salesman who came into the store used to say, well, he'll be a lawyer someday, and this pleased my father very much indeed. Now let me see.
All right, now.
These years at Warren Place moved rapidly, the children growing, and the usual events family excitement stirred us also. Eli was reading, especially history, and I remember the Henty novels and the beginnings of an interest in electronics. I remember when he built his first not the radio.
Crystal set.
Winding the coils himself and fastening the wires to a pole on the roof.
and magazines, Popular Mechanics particularly, were regular visitors at our house. I was myself very much interested in Arctic exploration and enjoyed the thrill of the announcement that Peary had discovered the North Pole. The news announcements about the sinking of the Titanic, about the great Chelsea fire, and other such episodes dotted the calendar of our lives. I have already mentioned that Judith Friedberg was a visitor in Boston, and her son, Emmanuel, became a student at Harvard and a visitor at our home also. My brother's education moved along, and he entered Harvard as a very young student, no more than 15 years of age. And I entered Radcliffe when I was 16. The war in Europe, of course, occupied our minds, and my interest in the peace movement became extremely strong and primary in all my interests and concerns. I did enjoy the companionship of Emmanuel Friedberg. He was a very sensitive and intelligent young fellow. He went to medical school, was filled with dreams and ambitions of service, and my own interests in the same direction made it almost inevitable that we would marry, which we did in September of 1918. And happily, he was never obliged to go into active service, although as a medical student, he was in the medical reserve. And we had the experience of celebrating Armistice Day on the 11th of November of that year. During the first year of our marriage, I continued my studies, and we lived with my parents in Boston, having moved to Elm Hill Park near Grove Hall off Warren Street, an area which was subsequently to go through the typical urban evolution of most eastern cities and to change from becoming a totally Jewish community eventually to a totally black community as it is today. Now we've got to get ourselves moved into Boston, into Pittsburgh.
Well, you didn't say about your brother, but go on, you'll come back to him later.
Thank you. rapidly brought inevitable changes. My brother, Elijah, became a graduate of Harvard Law School, and in the not too distant future became a member of the judiciary, carrying a career as judge for more than 43 years. My sister, Dorothy, graduated from Radcliffe College and became art critic for the Christian Science Monitor with a daily column for 40 years until her death. My younger sister, graduated from Radcliffe also and had special interests in the field of education, working in corrective speech with students who required such attention. As the youngest member of the family, she was destined to carry many of the family responsibilities. She moved to New York upon her marriage to Robert Hoffman. Perhaps I should say that Dorothy stayed in Boston and married Nicholas Slonimsky, the musicologist, author of many books and editor of the Encyclopedia of Music. Out of this family milieu, I moved to a new city with a completely different environment, with my young husband, who graduated from the Harvard Medical School and came to his home city to become an intern at the West Penn Hospital and later a practicing member of the medical fraternity. Still going?
Right.
That's interminable, isn't it?
Because I think, yeah.
It's only half
like okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, in Pittsburgh, I was a very young member of an aging family. I became the housekeeper shortly after my mother-in-law's death, and the companion of my 75-year-old father-in-law at a time when I was 21.
You lived in their home?
Yes. I came to know this city quite well from the standpoint of my husband, who had been born here and who knew many of the people, and from the standpoint of his rather large family, who were very much older than himself. Actually, he had nieces who were married and had children. And he soon was caught up in the 16 and 17 hour a day occupation of being a general practitioner. His office was in the Hill District, although we lived on Fairmount Street in East End, where already there was the B'nai Israel Synagogue and the Adas Yeshurun Synagogue, both dedicated on the same day, inasmuch as they couldn't agree between them to divide up the honors. Did you know that? In Pittsburgh, I found a pretty well-established Jewish community, also dominated by the old German element. The names of Kaufman, Rosenbaum, Klee, Ahrens abounded. But there was no question about who determined policy and program. There already, by the time I arrived here, there already was a Jewish Federation. That was in 1912, that they coordinated the institutions. And a Hebrew school had been constructed on Wiley Avenue at considerable expense and was rapidly found to be inappropriate to the needs of the community, which was moving out to East End and beginning to move to Square Hill. And not too much after that, the building was sold. The Irene Kaufman settlement on Center Avenue still held on to its role in the community, financed by the Kaufman money, and even went to considerable expense to put up an extra building with theater and swimming pool adjacent to the original IKS, even though many people in the community felt that this was a mistake due to the swift movement of population away from the Hill. I'm sure you heard that. When they put it back here. The Hill District of Pittsburgh had gone through a rapid and complete evolution. It was dotted with little synagogues representing the different regional groups among the Jews, the Galicians and the Austrians and the Russians and the Poles. There was even a Dutch synagogue. They had Talmud Torahs. There was the Rabbi Sivitz Talmud Torah. He was one of the original Orthodox rabbis in this community. And, of course, the Hebrew Institute, which was of a high caliber and which was destined to carry on the teaching tradition as the population moved. Soon, Jews were streaming from the Hill to East End. Some stopped off in Oakland, around the Craft Avenue area, where there was one synagogue, the Tree of Life, dominated largely and for a long period of time by Rabbi Halpern. But generally speaking, the bulk of the Jewish people went out to East End and to Squirrel Hill. That Squirrel Hill came later, and at first the preponderance was over on, what do they call that? What is that, south of Forbes? Are we north of Forbes?
Yes, we're north of Forbes.
Well, south of Forbes, all the way down towards the Forward Avenue. And gradually these streets, which had been very comfortable residential streets, were filled, some of them with smaller homes and some with larger homes. And then the north of Forbes area acquired substantial numbers of Jewish residents and many fine homes with spacious grounds and well cared for, were filled with Jewish life. Inevitably, of course, there were many new synagogues and schools, and the Irene Kaufman settlement, which had ended its days officially on the hill, now had branches here, known as the Irene Kaufman Center in Squirrel Hill, and another branch in East End, a branch which was not long lived. Some of the population, the Jewish population, also moved into suburbs like Mount Lebanon and St. Clair and Monroeville, which is to the east. The others were to the south. Monroeville, Churchill, and here we had the typical phenomenon of urban growth, with the Jews clustering in certain areas where they felt comfortable and at home. In Pittsburgh, the central institution of the Jewish community was the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. It was, of course, attached to the Montefiore Hospital, to the Jewish Home for the Aged, to the Hebrew Institute. What other buildings do we have? The YM and WHA. And other visible communal institutions which were independent, like the Anathan House, which was operated by the National Council of Jewish Women. And period.
Was it difficult for you to take up life in Pittsburgh, aside from the personal responsibilities you had to undertake with your husband's family? Was it a difficult adjustment to Pittsburgh life?
Well, I suppose you're going to say, I am frequently asked if it was difficult for me to make the transition from Boston to Pittsburgh. Inasmuch as I was quite young when this transition was made, and I was destined to spend the better part of my life here, I don't think that I can really say it was difficult. I was aware of certain fundamental differences, many of them due to the unique quality of the family environment into which I had come. My husband's family were all much older, he being the very youngest, the only member of their family born in this country, with sisters who were extremely orthodox in practice And on the other hand, two brothers who had married outside the faith. We had variety, to say the least. But our household was the center of the family.